His eyes flicked to Norsham.
And this one? Just a soldier who cannot obey a simple order,
Nagib said. Even I knew disobeying a direct order meant execution in the army. If I didn't get Norsham out, he'd be dead at dawn.
Disobedient soldiers are a failing of their commander,
General Dumas said. Nagib's jaw twitched.
It means they do not respect you.
The general drew his gun. The girl's head was still pressed to the ground. General Dumas grabbed her hair, yanking her up. Her prayer turned to a scream of pain.
Please, she begged. I didn't mean to do it.
Unlock her fetters,
the gallant general ordered. Nagib bristled at the command, but the general either didn't notice or didn't care. Nagib did as he'd been told, turning the lock on the girl's manacles. The moment the manacles dropped away, something happened to the girl. The features in her face started shifting. Her chin changed to a longer point, her nose flattened itself, her eyes pushed further back into her head before dropping again. She was frantically going from one face to another, like she was shuffling through a deck, trying to find the right card to play to save herself. Was she a skinwalker? She sure as hell wasn't human. The general watched with disinterest before he finally pressed the gun to her forehead. Her shape changing stopped instantly, and she was frozen as a girl with round cheeks and a high brow, her hair still wrapped painfully around the gallant general's fist. I felt helpless, standing in the dark, invisible, as someone else was about to die in front of me. The same way I had when Tamid was held across from me, a gun to his leg. The prayer for the dead echoed loudly off the walls. It reached its crescendo as she called out for forgiveness of her sins. I squeezed my eyes shut. Then a gunshot. I felt it down to my gut. The praying stopped abruptly. I bit down on my thumb, trying not to scream.
He will have her body burned.
The general's voice swirled out of the dark.
And tell anyone who asks, we have taken her prisoner.
When I opened my eyes again, she was slumped on the ground, motionless, blood pooling around her ruined forehead. Norsham had drawn away against a wall as far as his chains would go, and he was staring at the body, too.
Why?
Nagib said. His voice was flat for once. It had lost that clipped edge.
She's already dead. What's the point in pretending? It is one of the games we play, young prince, your father and I.
The gallant general holstered his pistol.
I was there the night of the coup, you know. The night your father took the throne. I was only a young soldier then. But I stood behind my general as your father made an agreement with him, and I know what was said better than most. Even my king, perhaps. I know that in public, the Sultan agreed to our authority, but he did not agree for us to strip your country of its sinful demon worship you call religion. But I also know what went unspoken but understood.
Nagib took a breath like he was going to respond, but the general barreled on, seeming to gather momentum as he spoke.
My mother, too, lay with a demon, much as your father's wife did. The mother of that rebel son he cannot seem to control. My mother gave birth to this squalling and green creature instead of a baby. My father did as he should. He had my mother bound in iron and thrown into the sea to drown. The baby he gave to me to deal with. It looked like it came from the ground, so I returned it to the ground. It was still screaming when I shoveled dirt over it.
I saw Nagib's throat constrict, as if he were swallowing his reply. When that demon child was born in the Sultan's palace, I admired your father for taking it upon himself to kill his wife by his own hand, following Galen law. I remember thinking we had made the right choice in this man who saw eye to eye with Galen values, though not all of your country agreed. And so, to keep the peasants quiet, we pretend these children of demons will be tolerated. And quietly, they are handed over to us and forgotten about. But your city guard tried to hide this prisoner from us and deliver her to you instead. The city guard is unused to such a large Galen presence here. They do not know your ways. Nagib sounded like a kid quibbling with a parent. This desert is wavering. The Galen general ignored him. Your rebel brother's foothold is getting stronger, and Asama is a great loss to us. He's not my brother, Nagib spat. My father has rejected him. You are a greater insult to him as a brother than he is to you. General Dumas snapped. Rumor in Isman is that your father speaks often of how he wishes his faithful sons were as strong and clever as his dissident one. Do you think I do not know that you scorned him by coming here on your demon-breed sand horses?
Sand horses? He meant Buraki. My heart jumped. One Buraki was all it had taken to distract Dustwalk enough for Jin to slip out and blow up the factory. If there was more than one, that could be one hell of a distraction.
There is no law, Nagib began.
No, just the games we play.
General Dumas interrupted him. He took a step forward, and Nagib faltered back.
I earned my first rank because I killed three of your uncles the night of your father's coup. Men who had supported the sinful ways of magic and demons, like your grandfather. I am very good at disposing of princes. I am here to find and kill your brother. But I decide who my enemies are, young prince.
My father? Your father has more sons than there are hours in the day.
I wonder whether he would even notice you were gone.
General Dumas turned on his heel and walked away. Nagib lingered, and he and Noorsham both watched the general go. When his steps had faded, Nagib spoke again to Noorsham, too low for me to hear. And then Nagib was gone, too. I leaned against the wall for a long time, shaking, the last of the light fading around us.
Amani?
Noorsham called into the dark. I didn't have much time. Jin would try to come after me soon. Noorsham. I stepped out from the shadows. I could just make him out in the lamplight leaking through the cracks of the door from the yard outside. He looked scared. Tell me where the prison and the stables are, and I'll get you out of this. I wondered if Jin could see me on my rooftop perch from his. It was dark now, and even the light of a full moon wasn't enough to make out a single form plastered on a roof above the barracks with a gun. He'd told me not to do anything stupid, but it was damned stupid of them to leave a window open in the stables, and I'd be damned stupid if I didn't take advantage of it. I gripped the edge of the roof and eased myself off slowly, my foot looking for purchase on the windowsill. More than once I'd climbed in and out of Tamid's window with a bruised-up back to trade him one of my hoarded books for some of his pain pills. I could hang on to the edge of the roof the same way I used to hang off of Tamid's window ledge and do just fine. Or at least have about the same chance of cracking my skull open as I did then. The window was barely enough for a body, I had to slide through it like I was trying to thread a needle with a piece of wool. Stones scraped across my hips. I took a breath and let go. For one wild second, all I could see was the stars, and all I could think of was the foolishness of immortal things who'd never seen death and so didn't know to fear it. The windowsill scraped across my back, taking skin with it. My elbow cracked against stone a second before my feet hit the ground hard enough to buckle every joint I had. I let out a string of profanities and miragine, and every language Jin had taught me to curse in as I dragged myself to my feet. There were a dozen stalls facing each other on either side of me, wooden doors with iron bolts. The air in the stables felt like the desert sky before a sandstorm. I could feel it down to my bones. Dozens of bodies shifted audibly, penned into their stalls, magic chafing against iron. As I stood to my full height, I could see them now, heads peering out over the doors of the stalls curiously. Buraki. I'd never seen this many immortal creatures in my whole life, let alone in one place. All but a handful of the 24 stalls were full. But I supposed, since they lived forever, the Sultans of Miraji had had plenty of time to stock the palace stables over the years. I wondered if any of them were the Buraki from legends, the ones ridden by hero princes into battle, or across the desert to save a beloved before night fell. The iron bolt on the first stall door slid back with the sort of clang that ought to have woken the dead. Instead, it seemed like everything stilled all around me. I took a deep breath, my fingers pressing against the cold iron. I pushed the door open before I could lose my nerve. The head that rose to look at me was the color of sun at high noon over a sand dune. I stepped forward carefully. I was raised a horse trader's niece. I'd learned to take a shoe off a horse almost as young as I'd learned to shoot a gun. Even in the dark, the familiar work came to my hand easily. The Buraki shook its head restlessly as the fourth shoe dropped to the ground. It might take a while to peel the taste of iron from its skin and shake off its mortal shape, but I didn't have time to wait. I was on to the next stall already, to a Buraki the color of cool dawn light over dusty mountains. The next one was the endless dark of the desert at night. All the Buraki were moving now, starting to raise their heads beyond the iron doors of their stalls, starting to shift from flesh to sand and back again, like they were gathering themselves up into a hurricane while I crawled like the heat on a windless day until they were all freed. Buraki might be immortal creatures, but that didn't mean they liked gunshots any more than a regular horse. I pressed myself against the wall as I raised the barrel of my gun skyward and fired. The Buraki exploded from their stalls, shattering them in their wake. I flinched, squeezing my eyes shut as flesh, sand, and wind churned around me. They were so far from mortal now, more like desert storms in the shape of horses, and nature had torn down more walls than men's hands ever would. Hoofbeats rang around the stables, making my teeth clatter, and then a noise like an explosion. When I opened my eyes, the wall into the barracks had collapsed. I raced through the debris into the chaos I had created. The Buraki had torn into the training ground, taking half of it with them. Most of one wall had already caved in, and what was left looked like it had mined to follow. Soldiers in every color of uniform, and some out of uniform, were pouring out. The Galen were drawing guns, but the Miraji knew better. There was no fighting a sandstorm with pistols. A man with a blue shirt half-buttoned raised a pistol, taking aim, only to disappear below the hooves of one of the Buraki. Soon, human screams joined the Burakis. The Buraki were beasts of the desert, and they'd make their way back into the sand. Sure enough, even as I watched, two of them ripped through another wall, bursting free into the streets. In the chaos, I noticed more people pouring into the yard now. Women and children, folks in desert clothes. I recognized Yasmin first. She was frantically pumping water into a huge leather skin hanging from the camel, trying to resupply before the desert. Norsham. I'd near forgotten him in the chaos. I turned towards the prayer house and slammed straight into Jin.
What did I say about not causing any trouble?
There was a laughing glint in Jin's eyes, and he was holding me off balance, close enough that he could tug and I'd fall straight into him. It worked, didn't it? I fired back.
No arguing with that.
He let go of one of my arms.
And now we've got to run while we've still got a distraction.
He eyed the path of destruction created by the Buraki.
I'd say now's the time.
No. I went to tug him the other way. There was a soldier. I promised I'd help him. Even as I pulled toward the prayer house, a Buraki tore across my path, narrowly missing trampling me. Jin yanked me back.
Amani, we don't have time. We need to go now while we've got a shot, or we might not get out at all.
I hesitated. I couldn't leave behind another stupid desert kid too weak to survive the desert. Not when I could save this one.
Amani, Jin said again. You're damn good at keeping yourself alive. Don't lose that now.
He was right. Norsham wasn't Tamid. I was too late. I ran. The streets were fast flooding with men and women from the caravan crowding each other for space, camels groaning, folks from Fahali shouting as they ran for safety. We plunged in with the rest. One second I was staring into a terrified face, the next I was shoved against a wall. One second Jin was there, then his hand was torn from mine. And then I was alone, running in a crush of strangers. I stripped off my kalat as I went, turning myself back into a boy. Gunshots sounded far behind us. I took a corner hard, my hands busy with tying my shima, and I stumbled and went down. Hands were there on my shoulders, pulling me to my feet. I looked back to see a man I didn't know, keeping me from getting trampled. I didn't even have time to thank him before the crowd swallowed him and forced me on down the streets. Open gates. The sight made my heart take off faster than the Buraki had. My legs picked up speed, pumping twice as fast, carrying me forward like I was running on the winds and the sand, too. Forward, forward, out of the walls, out of the trap. A shout of pure relief and joy and life on my lips. And then all I could see was the sand, and I forgot about everything. About fear, about bombs, about Jin. The desert reached out for us all with huge open arms. The churning mass that was chaos in the streets became order in the sand, welcoming us home. Chapter 15. We had no choice except to walk through the dark. There were dangers in the desert night, but there were threats behind us in Fahali, too. And we needed to be far away from them by the time dawn came. Not even Commander Naguib would be stupid enough to follow us through the desert in the dark. Night in the desert was different when it wasn't on the edge of the campfire. When there was no laughter and music and storytelling from the caravan to eclipse the sounds that came from the dark. There were things that made noises underneath the sand in the desert night, things that screamed from the mountains. Now we could hear them all. The camel's knees huddled close together. The only noise that came from them was the clink of the tack on the beasts and the sound of mumbled praying. Yasmin's face looked pale in the light of the lamp swinging from the back of the nearest camel. One of her little cousins had fallen asleep with his head on her shoulder.
3 hours until dawn, Jin said, checking the sky. I nodded as he dropped back to hold up the rear of the caravan while I stayed in front. I knew we'd been walking for a long time. Distance had swallowed Vahali behind us. The night seemed much bigger than it ever had, and I felt a lot smaller than I ever had.
I heard a sound then and stopped walking. There was something out there. I turned slowly, peering into the dim glow offered by the moon and the handful of oil lamps that hung from the camels we'd been able to take with us, casting them in small pools of light. I saw it a second before it sprang. The ghoul unfurled from a viscous, leathery ball into spindly limbs and filmy black wings. Its huge, gaping mouth opened in a screech as it leapt. I fired. A few of the caravan folks cried out and ducked instinctively at the noise. My bullet caught it square in the chest. Black guts scattered across the sand. The thing screeched again. And this time, from the deep of the night, 100 identical voices screeched back. Yasmin turned the body over with her toe as the caravan silently stared, frozen in shock. A nightmare, Yasmin confirmed. I hadn't seen a nightmare since I was a kid. One had crawled into the house I grew up in while we slept. My mother had put a kitchen knife through it before it got to anyone. It had barely put up a fight. But that one was alone and injured and desperate. This one was in its own territory, where they traveled in packs. I could see them now as my eyes adjusted to the dark, scuttling through the sand, their sinewy wings rippling through the blackness. They fed on fear instead of flesh and blood. One venomous bite sent victims into an uneasy sleep, and a second drew out the fear that bled from the first bite. Some said they drained the soul itself. Most folks didn't wake up from a nightmare bite. I checked the handful of bullets in my pocket. "Everybody stay close to the light," I called down the caravan. Ghouls couldn't hunt in the day. Firelight wasn't exactly the same, but it was the closest we had.
"This doesn't change anything. We keep walking and..."
"Skinwalker!"
The voice belonged to Tal Oman. My gun swung up, ready to face the new monster, tracking Tal Oman's pointed finger. Only it was me he was pointing at. My Shima, badly tied after the escape from Vahali, had fallen away when I shot, and now my hair was tumbling down to my shoulders, my face on show. Tal Oman came at me in long, angry strides. Jin was in front of me in a blink. His hand caught Tal Oman in the chest, 3 steps before he reached me, a warning gesture that he could easily turn more painful if he wanted.
"Rethink your next move, my friend."
"He's a skinwalker."
Tal Oman spat, though he had the sense not to strain any farther against Jin's grip.
"He changed his shape."
"No."
Parviz held up a lamp so he could see me clearer.
"She's a liar."
"Well, I didn't so much lie as trick you." It was a relief to speak in my own voice, even if it was strained by false lightness. The difference being you can blame yourselves as well as me. I wasn't shaking anymore. I refused to shake. No matter that the whole caravan was looking at me like I was some abomination. It was Isra who whispered too loudly to Jin.
"So I guess she's not your brother, then?"
She treated me to a once-over.
"And here I was, thinking you might be worth marrying to young Yasmin. Should have been suspicious when you listened to her so close. No man does that.
Parviz sized me up the same way he had back in Mustil. I didn't know what he saw. The same kid with a gun, maybe, except with a chest and some hips, and not so much a kid.
Am I supposed to trust a girl to keep us alive?
Father, she saved us from the gallows in Fahali. Yasmin snorted, but she was silenced with one raised hand.
Saved us to drag us out into the desert at night.
Parviz waved at the nightmares stalking us in the dark.
And look where we are now.
Parviz spat.
We would be safe in the daylight if it weren't for you.
That one stung. After almost 2 months of being trusted, this was all it took.
No. You're here because you decided you valued money over your own lives.
Jin interrupted.
And now Amani is your best chance at staying alive, so I'd listen to the girl with the gun if I were you.
I'm planning on surviving the night. I slammed the chamber of the gun shut. In this desert, I could never seem to escape being seen as powerless, so long as I wasn't a man. Everybody stay in the light and grab hold of any iron you've got. If something moves, we'll shoot it. But I had lost any authority with my gender. The caravan looked to Parviz, whose eyes traveled between me and Jin.
Do as she says,
he ordered finally, spurring the caravan into movement. And then, turning back to me, he added,
Get us to dawn alive, and I won't cut your pay.
The nightmares were wary but hungry. They kept out of the circle of the light, but every time they spotted a shadow, they leapt into the air in a spread of wings that blotted out the stars. The gunshot would go off, and they would fall thrashing into the sand. I was mostly shooting blind. Nightmares were as black as the night around us. They looked like part of the sand until they launched themselves, the torchlight catching them a second before it was too late. But I was never too late, and I didn't miss. I fired one shot after another, falling into a hypnotic daze, as if my mind surrendered to my hands and the trigger. The night was screams and the smell of gunpowder, and my gun snapping shut with a fresh round in the chamber. I fired again. 2 shots in a row. A pair of nightmares went down, and my gun clicked empty. I was reaching for fresh bullets before the last one was done twitching. My fingers scraped over 3 bullets. Only 3. I came back to myself all at once. My hands shook a little as I loaded them into the gun. The sky was the color of a healing wound. Somewhere across the horizon, the sun was taking its sweet time. I didn't know if I could make 3 bullets last. A nightmare unstitched itself from the shadows 2 feet away, and I fired before my eyes could focus. 2 bullets now. 1 more dead nightmare. Dozens more crawling in the sand. I knuckled my eyes tiredly.
You all right?
Jin's hand was on my shoulder, but his eyes were still on the desert. The faint glow on the horizon sent light and shadow playing across his jaw. I'm alive, I said. You seem to be too.
You know, there's a saying at sea. Red sky in the morning, sailors take warning.
I glanced at the horizon. Yeah, well, it's a little late for a warning. We could have used that yesterday. I cracked my fingers. My hands were sore from clenching the gun so tight. How many bullets do you have left? Jin just shook his head, spreading empty hands wide. I opened the chamber of my gun. My tired fingers fumbled for the bullet.
No.
Jin shook his head.
You're the better shot.
One bullet each. It's only fair. You cover the back, I'll take the front.
Jin hesitated only a second. Then he took it and flicked open the chamber of his gun as I trained my own pistol on the desert, covering long enough for him to reload and drop back. The sun was almost up now. Two of them leapt at once. I aimed for the second and hesitated. The first was racing across the sand, straight for Yasmin. She yelped. Jin shoved her out of the way, firing before I could take aim, and he missed. The nightmare latched onto Jin's chest. Its teeth sank straight into his heart. I fired without thinking what would happen if I missed the beast and hit the boy, or about how it was too late to save him anyway. My last bullet caught the nightmare in the head, and the beast tumbled off Jin in a roll of thrashing wings, dying in the sand as the sun broke the horizon. The desert came alive with the noise of screaming and scurrying as the nightmares burrowed back into the earth. I rushed to Jin, my useless gun by my side. Hey! Hey! I tapped his face so that I didn't have to look at the huge black puncture wound in his chest and the blood and venom mixing just below his tattoo. He must have had a shot of venom straight to his heart. I was sure mine was pumping fast enough for the both of us. My hands were shaking so hard I couldn't find a pulse. His eyes were closed, his body sprawled, guns still in his hand like he was a fallen soldier. Finally, I saw his chest rise and fall ever so slightly, his breathing shallow. A shadow made long by the early morning light fell over us. I squinted up at Parviz. Help me! I wasn't much for begging, but I might as well so long as I was already on my knees. I didn't have any lower to go.
He's as good as dead unless he gets treated properly,
Parviz said, taking in Jin's worth now that he was injured. His pulse was beating too slowly against my knuckles.
We're days from civilization.
I tried to remember how long it took for nightmare venom to get through the whole body. A night? A day? Less? Parviz scraped his knuckles across his beard.
We're wasting sunlight.
He was right. I moved to put my weight below Jin's shoulder to lug him to his feet. Help me get him to a camel. Parviz frowned like I might be simple. I supposed he thought I was, since I wasn't a man any longer.
He's as good as dead. The dead are just more weight.
Jin's not dead yet. I couldn't help but feel they'd help me if they still thought I was a boy. And everyone here would be if it weren't for him.
And we'll all drink to him in gratitude when we get to safety.
Parviz didn't waver.
But until then, we are mighty low on water. And it's a waste of it to try to help a boy who isn't going to live to see another dawn. You can stay with him and die, too, or you can come with us. You best decide quick, though.
He was right. Jin was as good as dead anyway, and I'd sworn I wasn't going to die in this desert, not on anyone's account. I told Jin once that he wasn't worth dying for, not when I was so close to Isman. It would be so easy. No, it was Jin. It would be impossible. I'd been dreading Dasama because I didn't want to take a separate path. I wanted to stay with Jin more than I wanted Isman. I liked what life felt like with him in the desert, like we were equals, like we fit together, too tangled to pull apart so easily. I thought of the ruins of Dasama. If Jin died, there'd be no one to take the news of what the Galen were doing to his people. The desert didn't give mercy, and it didn't deserve any. It left the weak for dead if it didn't outright kill them. But not Jin,
who belonged to some other country, who didn't belong to this desert at all, at least not enough to die with it. Or whatever stupid thing he was trying to do. Who didn't deserve to get left behind by a desert girl for her own life, like Tamid had, like Norsham. You can go to civilization or go to hell for all I care. And it felt like the sand was stretching around my feet until that was all there was in the world, until Isman crept farther and farther away. I'm not leaving him for dead. Chapter 16. I pulled the knife out of Jin's belt. There was mercy, and then there was a coward's escape, and the cowards had walked on. I pressed the knife against the wound, and the black venom oozed out across the blade. I wiped it on my shirt before laying it back against his skin. I did it again and again until my neck burned from the sun, and more blood oozed out than black. Jin! I slapped him hard across the face. His eyes squeezed shut tighter, so I hit him again. This time his eyes opened. Jin! I grabbed both his shoulders. Don't you dare fall back asleep! His eyes cracked open just far enough to see me. Where? He started weakly. They walked on. I sat back. We needed to follow the camel's knees tracks to civilization, find help, some medicine. And you're still here? Jin squinted at me, then started to laugh half-heartedly. Either I'm dreaming or I'm dead. I had to keep him talking. Dream about me often? Dreams. Nightmares. Not sure. Jin's hand reached up like he wanted to check if I really was an illusion. I grabbed it as it grazed my jaw and swung it round my shoulder. Come on, dream yourself to your feet. I braced my shoulder under his arm and heaved him up. Jin said something to me in Si Qian and then laughed like it was the funniest thing he'd ever heard. Oh well, he might not be lucid, but he was upright, and when I put one foot in front of the other, he followed. We'd been walking for a little while when the babbling started. Words in other languages, names I didn't know. One I did. Sakar. Our old joke churned out by his mind made sick with the venom. I tried to convince him not to talk, but he was too far gone in some delusion. And so long as I kept him walking, I didn't have it in me to worry about anything else. The sun was straight above us when I realized we weren't following the caravan's tracks in the sand anymore. I spun around, confused. Had we gotten off course? Had they blown away already? The sun had risen to our right this morning. I wasn't sure if we were still headed north. Or anywhere at all. We're lost. Jin was sitting with his head between his knees. He struggled to pull something that glinted in the sun from his pocket. The broken compass. Here. He pressed the compass into my hand. We're not lost. He was delirious if he thought a faulty compass would do us any good. Something inside me was cracking. At this rate, we were both going to die. In the desert, lost meant dead. If the things in the dark didn't get you, the sun did. Jin. I dropped down next to him, trying to keep him awake. Jin, this compass doesn't point north. If we follow it, where is it going to take us? I could tell Jin was struggling to stay lucid, his body fighting against the nightmare venom. To help. We're not far. Not far from what? I pushed. Majin's only answer was something in Si Qian I didn't understand. He was done making sense. I sagged onto the sand, holding the compass. The arrow pointed straight west now, into the Dev's Valley. In the haze of the desert heat, I could see the place the sand ended, a sheer drop down a cliff face. What the hell? Didn't matter what direction we died in. It was a hell of a lot harder than it looked getting down into the canyon than it had looked from the top. And it had looked impossible from there. Jin could still walk, but he leaned more heavily on me with every step. I had a mean slice on my arm from skidding on some loose rocks near the top of the valley. One cracked rib from where I'd slammed into a rock nearer the bottom. There were a few others in between that I hadn't had time to worry about yet. The rest of my body was just a dull ache under Jin's weight. At least there was water at the bottom. The Dev's Valley ran like a wound deep into the skin of the desert, a shallow river like an exposed vein at the bottom. I sat Jin down as I plunged my hands into the water and scrubbed blood before sticking my face in, too, and gulping as fast as I could. I gathered a handful of water. Jin. His head was tipped back, eyes squeezed shut against something he didn't want to see, except it was inside his head. Jin. I pressed the water to his mouth and forced him to drink. I sat back with my legs in the water and pulled out the compass. I'd managed not to smash it, at least. It pointed straight into the dusty canyon maze, but it didn't say how far I had to go, and Jin wasn't in any kind of state to tell me. Only one way to find out. I was just lugging Jin back to his feet when I heard it, echoing through the canyon walls. The sound of hoofbeats on stone. Someone was coming out of the canyon. I hesitated for only a second before heading for cover. We moved painfully slowly, Jin's weight pressing down on my spine. I half-led, half-dragged him into the dusty maze. I could hear the hoofbeats getting louder with every step. We were going too slowly. We needed to get to cover before whoever it was spotted us. We reached the mouth of one of the paths into the canyon just as a soldier in Galen blue emerged from another. My whole body rebelled against the sight of him as I remembered the Galen in Fahali. The general with his gun to the girl's head. But there was nothing I could do now except watch with bated breath from our place hidden in the shadows of the canyon while the soldier dismounted, dropping to his knees to drink. Amani. Jin had finally opened his eyes. They were clear for a moment. He can't find us. If they do. I clapped my hand over his mouth as the soldier raised his head, looking in our direction. He won't find us, I promised, quietly as I could. We waited in silence while the soldier finished at the river before he mounted again. From the top of his horse, he pulled out something hanging around his neck that shined silver and pressed one end of it to his mouth. A sharp whistle blast echoed off the canyon walls. He waited while it went silent, and then another one answered. When that went silent, a third answered. A search party. For us, or for something else. They're not going to find us, I repeated. So quiet I wasn't sure if it was for Jin or if it was a prayer. They won't find us. We'd been walking a few hours when I needed to rest. I leaned against the rock face, letting Jin slide to the ground, trying to catch my breath. We'd had to double back twice already when the path dead-ended. I clutched the compass to my chest. I was still following the needle, but I had to get my head to stop spinning and every step brought more chance the next one would lead me to the Gallen soldiers. The sun was getting low when I ran into another dead end, except none of the other dead ends had looked like this. The wall of the canyon was painted bright, almost violent colors, climbing one on top of another, from the dusty ground all the way up to where I couldn't see anymore. A girl with yellow hair turning into an animal. An immense red genie raging against roiling water. A blue-skinned man surrounded by demons. A battle that might be able to split the earth open right where we stood and leave a mark the size of this valley. And wedged between a dancing girl with snakes for hair and a demon brandishing a severed head was a painted door. I checked the compass. Sure enough, it pointed straight ahead. I was raised on stories of Jean and their world, of secret palaces in the clouds, homes that could be summoned from the sand. Doors to their kingdoms that could only be opened by whispering a secret word into the lock. I'd bet my last Luzi, the Rebel Prince's camp, was behind this door. I traced the line of the door with my finger. Solid stone by the looks of it. Solid stone until the right password was whispered to it, like in the stories. Or else I was a deluded girl with a bad habit of putting too much stock in the stories my mother told me.
Jin.
I shook his shoulders. My voice was scratchy with thirst.
Jin, wake up. I need you to wake up. I need the password.
Lost?
I jumped at the voice. The Gallen soldier, the one we'd seen, was standing a few feet away, leaning on the other side of the valley in the shade, looking smug. I might have been afraid if I wasn't already so desperate.
How did you find us?
My voice sounded scratchy.
On your feet before I have to shoot you, he commanded.
But I didn't see a gun, and he was speaking perfect Mirajin. Something was wrong here.
Why don't you come make me?
He was hovering in the shadows. Then I noticed the fresh blood smeared along his jawline.
Or are you afraid of daylight, skinwalker?
The change in his face was instantaneous. It became a person's face without any humanity in it. The skinwalker bared its sharp teeth in the soldier's face. The face belonging to its last kill, I realized. I watched in horror as it sauntered over until it was at the very edge of the shadows cast by the canyon walls.
Well, it would have been nice to feed on you now.
Its tongue flicked out, long and black between sharp teeth.
I am starving, even after eating that foreigner's flesh. And you look so tasty. But I suppose I can wait a few hours.
You can wait until you're dead. I'll be gone by night.
I slung Jin's arm back over my aching shoulder. If there was one thing that could keep me going, it was a skinwalker.
And where will you go, blue-eyed girl?
The skinwalker had a hungry smile.
You're trapped.
My eyes flicked back the way I'd come. In the time I'd been sitting, the sun had crept along the side just enough to cast the opening of the valley into shadow. Jin and I were standing in the last patch of safe sunlight.
Open!
I banged my hand against the door.
Unlock! Let me in!
The rock surface of the painted door wouldn't budge. I didn't figure the password would be obvious, but I wasn't going to die for not trying.
I think I'll keep you alive for a while,
The skinwalker was pacing back and forth along the shadow border.
That way, you can watch me eat your flesh with those pretty eyes, and I'll listen to you scream.
The skinwalker grinned with the dead Galen soldier's mouth, only it was full of fangs. It wanted my attention. It was practically on top of me now, the shadows so close, I had to pull my elbow against my stomach. The light would burn it, but it could be patient with the light shrinking every second. I was running out of time. I was sagged against the stone. We were going to die here. We'd escaped Dustwalk, jumped off a train, crossed a desert, and survived Fahali and the nightmares, and now this was where my story came to an end. In a dusty canyon at the hands of a hungry ghoul. Stories. The memory flickered tiredly in my mind. Sakaar. Jin had gotten the name wrong. The name of the genie used to summon help, to open doors into his kingdom. And then he'd gotten it wrong again. He'd said it as he rambled incoherently from the nightmare venom in the desert. I leaned in close to the door. I felt stupid, but there was no one to see me except a skinwalker who wanted to eat me whole, and I didn't care much what it thought. I pressed my mouth to the painted keyhole and whispered the name. Sakaar. And then I held my breath. Nothing happened. The last of my hope fled as I sagged back against the door. The sun betrayed me in a flash. 1 second we were in the last of the light, the next the shade touched me. The skinwalker's hand came with it. Long talons scraped across my arm, blood blossoming in 5 long trails across my skin. Its teeth went for my neck. I remembered what Jin had taught me. I didn't try to break free. I bore my weight into the monster. Its teeth scraped through flesh and blood, tearing my shoulder open. Agony tore through my whole body as we toppled to the ground together. I shoved it off me and stumbled back into the painted wall. My blood smeared across the shape of a girl riding a leopard. Of all the unimportant things to notice before dying. The rattling shriek of stone grating against stone filled my ears. In an open stone archway where the painted door had been, stood the most polished-looking girl I'd ever seen. Like she was born pretty, but she'd been scrubbed and groomed until she was as close to perfect as any living thing could get. Her face was all desert plains and dunes, but her dark eyes weren't soft. Strands of black hair caught in her eyelashes as she stared the scene down. Her eyebrows raised as she saw Jin, unconscious in the sand next to me. Her eyes went to the skinwalker next. She reached behind her and a pair of scimitars hissed as she drew them across her body. You have blood on your claws. The skinwalker sprang for her. She didn't move like Jin, or like any of the soldiers I'd ever seen. She moved like a storm someone had given steel to. She sidestepped the ghoul like it was nothing, her right sword slicing across its arm. The monster snarled and rounded on her just in time to get her left sword straight through its stomach and her right sword through the neck. The eyes in the stolen face went wide. For a second, my heart swelled. It looked so human. Then its fanged mouth fell open. She yanked the blades out, black with ghoul blood. The thing slumped to the ground, dead. You must be the one who said the password, she said. I opened my mouth to answer. I had a second to realize I'd lost a lot of blood before everything went dark.
Chapter 17. I came awake, staring at stars. I squeezed my eyes shut again and then reopened them. The stars were stitched into the tent above me, yellow cloth constellations in the lamplight. I moved to prop myself up, and my arm rebelled in pain, making my head spin. I felt like death, which was a privilege of being alive, at least. It took a second for my head to steady. My arm was bandaged from wrist to shoulder. The bandages smelled of honey and something I didn't recognize. Next to me, Jin was lying still under a heavy blanket pulled up to his elbows. His bare chest was slick with sweat. Fresh bandages were wrapped around him, so I couldn't see the wound anymore. But his chest was rising and falling with shallow breathing, and that was enough to make my own breathing ease. He was alive. We were both alive. The rush of relief that followed was enough to lift me onto my elbows to get a proper look around. In the corner sat a stranger, a boy about Jin's age, with a round face, arms crossed over his chest, curly black hair falling into his eyes as his chin flopped forward in sleep. I sat up slowly, careful not to wake him. The fact that I was bandaged and not bound and gagged seemed like a good sign. But just because they'd fixed me up didn't mean I ought to trust them, whoever they were. My shirt had been replaced, but my shima was still tied around my middle, and between it and my body was the compass. My heart raced in relief as I pulled it out. My eyes dropped to a small pile of bottles and bandages in the corner, and among them, a knife that looked like it was for medicine. There was dried blood on it. I snatched it up. I needed to find out where I was, and I wasn't going unarmed. The sleeping boy was an easy guard to slip. Sunlight hit my face violently through the tent flap, blinding me the second I pushed outside. Somebody had painted the world while I slept. I'd thought green was the color of dusty scrub that fought its way up between stones, not this color that boasted its existence unafraid to the desert. Behind me, the huge dusty gold of the cliff face loomed over the camp, but the sand surrendered quickly enough as it crept away from the walls. We were overlooking an oasis, a burst of color and life, scattered with people. At a glance, I guessed it was about the size of Dustwalk, 100 or so souls. Only comparing this place to Dustwalk was like comparing a Buraki to a donkey. And at the center of it all rose a gold and red tower that was high enough to scratch the blue off the sky. My legs decided to walk instead of surrendering me to the ground at the last second. I held the compass close to my body with one hand. The other one clutched the knife. I didn't know how much use it'd be. I was lightheaded, either from loss of blood or from the overwhelming strangeness of this place. My legs moved half on their own. In a few steps, the burning sand turned cool as I stepped into the shade of the oasis. I passed below trees hanging heavy with oranges and pomegranates and some fruits I didn't even recognize. They sprang up from everywhere, around pools so clear and deep. I felt if I got close enough, I might see the beating heart of the earth in them. The compass needle pointed straight through the oasis. Tents of every color were scattered among the trees, propped against trunks for support or hanging from tree branches. And the people. Everybody I saw was dressed in colors that looked like they'd been born back when the world was new. A few folks were gathered around a pool, washing clothes and chattering. They didn't look up when I passed. A girl who had killed the skinwalker was leading a half dozen men and women with wooden blades through what looked like army drills.
I almost stepped on two boys, younger than me by the looks of it, who were tinkering.